Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach and master problem solver. It seems to be the most counterintuitive thing that there is, going against everything we thought we knew about love, sex, biology, monogamy. We're talking about cuckolding and hot wifing. When a man seeks the excitement of allowing, even sometimes watching his wife engage in sex with other men, is this practice as old as the internet, or has this been going on since prehistoric times? If you thought the movie Indecent Proposal had your blood going, wait till you hear about the couples who eroticize fear, jealousy, possession, and commitment. Psychologist and author David Lay, no pun intended, will join us to talk about how, contrary to popular belief, this fetish and lifestyle has largely enhanced the relationships of the people who practice it. Usually prompted by a fantasizing husband, why would this wife or any wife agree to do something like this? And what happens when she does? Is this the salvation or the destruction of marriage? We are lucky and privileged to have Mark Darien here for again. It's his third time, and we're hoping it's not his last. Thanks, Mark, for coming onto the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, David, thank you so much for coming onto our show. It's a topic that most people don't even know what it means. So why don't you first tell us what cuckolding and hot wifing is?
Well, let me give it a little bit more background, if it's okay.
Just sure.
More than better. How I end up in this. I'm a psychologist and pretty traditional psychologist, honestly. I work with sexuality in my practice, but I also oversee a large clinic and I do a lot of services through myself and my staff. And a few years ago, I was, to be absolutely honest, dealing with depression. I was depressed, banging my head up against the wall with government, bureaucracy, with healthcare reform, with managed care. And I needed something to kind of really sink my teeth into. And it just so happened that I ran into these two couples who were practicing what they called a hot wife lifestyle. Now, what this was where the wife would go out and be promiscuous with other men, and with the husband's permission, and not just permission, but strong encouragement and kind of gleeful excitement. Now, as a psychologist and as a therapist, I've always been very, you know, supportive, very client positive, very accepting of a lot of sexual diversity. But when I ran into this, my initial response was, "You've got to be kidding me!" And I literally thought, "Wow, can this possibly be healthy?" But the interesting thing was that both of these couples that I encountered were incredibly successful. They were very professional. They had each been married over two decades. One couple had been married for three decades. The wives were extraordinarily successful. One was a professor. The other was a vice president within a very significant corporation. And I was forced to look at my assumptions and say, wait a minute, you know, why am I assuming that this would be unhealthy and crazy for these people to be doing it, when the reality is what they were doing worked for them, and not only worked, but worked very well. They had very healthy relationships. They had extraordinary communication. They had a lot of sexual excitement in their relationship that, frankly, a lot of couples that have been married that long don't have. I thought it was fascinating, and it got even more fascinating when I started to look and to see, had anybody else ever written anything about this? And I found one article, one academic article from Israel in the 1990s that addressed this issue at a minimal level, but nothing else. And so I said, wow, this is really interesting. Let me see what I can do. So I spent the next 2 years, when I would travel on business, posting ads on Craigslist and interviewing couples that did this. Now, I had to tell all of these couples, no, I don't want to sleep with you. No, I don't want to have sex with your wife.
That must have been hard.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Some of these people were beautiful.
That's part of the research, right? That's
smart.
That's how I would do it.
Really interesting people. But I wanted to find out why they were doing what they were doing and how it worked for them. And along the way, I looked at biology, I looked at psychology, I looked at the history, and I found evidence of stories about this going back to Greek and Roman times. As I started paying attention to this, I saw this dynamic, this wife being sexual with other men, with the husband's permission, something that was common in literature. Shakespeare wrote about it a lot. And I started to understand why my initial impression was that this must be crazy, because we have as a society and humans for many, many generations, for thousands of years, treated this as inherently unhealthy, damaging, and destructive.
I mean, crazy normally, by the way, is defined as something that offends your senses. Meaning, for someone who buys a Ferrari, if it offends your senses, then it's crazy. So I don't like that word. The one thing that is absolutely true, and I would say this, is that because of the hot wifing, the cuckolding, because there are no victims per se, i.e., if everyone is honest with one another, human sexuality, we don't know if it's evolving or devolving, but at the end of the day, sometimes it's a lot more honest than the pretense of monogamy when everyone on the side is trying to get a piece of the side. The question here is not whether or not, for me, is it healthy? Because obviously some couples are able to do it successfully, and that is the way they keep the excitement in the relationship. I just would want it to be, from my perspective, I would want it to be thought as not the only way that one could keep a relationship monogamous and still exciting without having to do this.
Yeah, like have they tried salsa dancing?
Sure. I think one of the things that I kind of jokingly sort of explored at the end of the book and as I wrote it and talked about it was getting these couples to go around and do workshops for monogamous couples about how to communicate and how to have excitement in their lives, even if they chose to still maintain monogamy. I've seen some couples that flirt with the edges of this, where, for instance, they'll go to a bar and the wife will pretend not to be with the husband, and the wife will, get hit on and flirted with and tried to, other guys will try to pick her up. And then after a while, the husband comes in and kind of swoops her away, and they go home and have passionate sex, kind of reclaiming that territory, kind of reclaiming that relationship.
And yeah, it's called role playing.
Absolutely.
It's just another role playing. I mean, the question here is that, you're running against a couple of themes. One is that there is a built-in jealousy in Homo sapiens, that we are protective, we are jealous, we are territorial, and we like to protect what's ours. We don't really like to share the person we're fucking. Having said that, there are people who get turned on by different things, and the thing that I guess that I would protect is the ability for each couple to determine what is healthy or not healthy. But at the same time, what happens when the instinct for jealousy kicks in, and at one point one of them says, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore, and the other one says, this is fun? Doesn't that create its own little problem?
I think it creates a problem that is similar to problems that any other couple has, which is when they need to negotiate and compromise and communicate over their shared and different interests. I think healthy relationships are based on those kinds of principles: negotiation, compromise, and communication, respect for one another and for one another's autonomy and independence.
This sounds like it would work better for single, for people without children. I mean, how do you tell your kids, mom's screwing these four guys, I've got their names? Wouldn't that be a little bit?
In fact, I argue exactly the opposite. I think that this works better for couples that have already had children, because I think it is easier at that point for these husbands to share their wives when they're not so worried about that kind of evolutionary cuckolding principle, that fear of raising another man's child and you not having your own children.
Right, but aren't you influencing the kid in terms, or the kids in terms of, rather than let them form their own sexual behavior, that monogamy is inherently boring?
Most of the couples that I saw didn't share this practice with their kids. They kept it private. It was something that they did perhaps when they traveled. It was something that they did kind of on the side. And I think that they were frankly less concerned about the impact on their kids or their families, and more concerned about the public shame of engaging in this.
It probably helps the kids.
A wife who cheats on her husband is called a slut. A husband who allows his wife to cheat on her is called a cuckold and a weakling and a schmuck. And both of these individuals throughout history have been driven out of societies, have been treated with inordinate stigma, and that still exists today. I think it's one reason why cuckolding and the concept of it is so popular on the internet, because of the privacy and the anonymity of it.
So let me ask you a question. So basically, this all came about because Obama screwed up the healthcare system. Is that what we're talking about?
No, this was a good bit prior. This was me dealing with managed care bureaucracy.
Just take cash like me,
that
man.
I couldn't control. Yeah. But I'll be absolutely honest. I mean, it was fascinating. I learned so much. I learned so much about people, about relationships.
Now, are you married?
Reality. I am.
David, would you ever consider this as a experiment or experience for yourself?
As I have said, if the right man came along who was a gourmet chef, a mechanic, and a landscape artist who loved to work on my car and my yard and make fabulous meals, I might be okay with sharing my wife.
What would her criteria be, by the way?
I think you would have to ask her. He would probably look something like young Robert Redford.
Ah, there you go. So the question is not what, if you could name the price, if I could name the terms.
I've been mistaken for a young Robert Redford.
He does. He actually looks like Robert Redford in his youth.
I don't have the face or the hair or anything, but
just the attitude.
Well, okay, maybe I don't. Maybe
I mentioned Robert Redford, but remember the movie, Indecent Proposal. That is about this. It's about, Woody Harrelson and Demi Moore and Robert Redford. And Robert Redford offers, $1 million to sleep with Woody Harrelson's wife. And then they do it, and then it devolves into jealousy and fear and destruction of the relationship and anger and loss and sadness, because that is Hollywood's presentation of this, that if you do this, danger and harm and destruction and sadness.
Well, I don't know if it's Hollywood's presentation. I think that if we're really honest with ourselves, most relationships break up over adultery. I mean, they break up over lack of money. That's probably the number two. But they do break up over jealousy, over lack of communication, over lack of sexual interests. But a lot of it is simply jealousy or adultery. So, meaning we're not really making that up. And I think that's because we're hotwired, to be somewhat possessive in those special relationships. In the same way, would we really want to see our children? I have two girls. I'm glad they're sexually, healthy and active, and I encouraged it even from I was never very prudish, but I wouldn't want them to be sleeping around with every single person they went out with.
And I'm not sure that that is the presentation here. I mean, I think that, again, these couples are defining what works for them. And some of these couples are very promiscuous. Some of them are very selective. But they are choosing to identify what form of relationship, what form of sexual agreements work for them. You know, one of these couples was very, very thoughtful. The husband was very philosophical. And he said, you know, as an existentialist, that he did not want to accept that society could dictate what form of relationship he and his wife got to have.
Well, meaning, I could, again, I am a libertarian, which means you know, everyone should do their own thing, mind their own business, and make sure that you don't project your value system on another person, as long as you respect their ability to carry out their own value system. So I don't have a problem with that. What I would say is that we also don't want to go to the extent of saying that this is inherently not more problematic if it was done on a wider scale and would make society both safer and more functional. Because I think jealousy would pervade, and I think that there'd be a lot of, you know, a lot of confusion, and possibly, meaning, I don't know how safe these people are in their sexual activity. Maybe you do. You could tell me about that. Meaning, what does one need to do in order to establish who they're going to cuckold with?
You know, I think in terms of safety, in fact, research has shown that couples who are choosing to be non-monogamous in one fashion or another, whether they are swingers or what's called polyamorous, where they are engaging in more love kind of type relationships, a variety of kinds of different flavors of this, they are actually more likely to be aware of and engage in safe sex than other couples and individuals. In fact, you know, gays, lesbians, and bisexuals are more likely to practice safe sex than heterosexual college students, who are more likely to go out and hook up, you know, unsafely.
Yeah, that's the truth.
These are people who, by and large, are looking thoughtfully and autonomously at what role sexuality plays in their life. They're considering it from that perspective and making some, I think, pretty conscious choices. And I think we have to applaud that. I think that one of the challenges that we have is that in many ways we are still applying and considering relationships based on, frankly, outdated expectations. You know, throughout history, relationships didn't last as long as they do today. People didn't live as long as they do today.
That's why they didn't last, yeah.
This is critical. We didn't interact with the number of people that we do today. You know, in historical villages, you might interact with, you know, up to a couple hundred people. Today, you know, you can turn on Facebook and interact with 500 to 1,000 people.
My office is in Grand Central. I interact with 10,000 people going out for lunch.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think that this is playing havoc with the way in which our sexuality develops. So, you know, think about this, that, you know, what we understand now about sexuality is that it kind of developed in what I call a sexual arms race, where females and males were kind of unconsciously and biologically competing in order to try and control conception. And when a man believed that his female mate had been away from him and could have interacted with other men and could have, you know, had the opportunity to be sexual with another man, the man was programmed, biologically, instinctually driven to have sex with the female mate, to have more vigorous sex, more aggressive sex, to try and get his sperm in there to compete with the sperm of another man if they could be present. Now, that was what developed historically thousands of years ago when we were living in these small conclaves, in these small tribes. Today, relationships, you know, we are interacting with other people all day long, every day. And I think that our biological expectations, our psychological underpinnings of our relationships and sexual beliefs developed in a very different setting that we are struggling to apply. You know, we don't know what this does, you know, this kind of non-monogamous practice or this sort of relationship agreement or negotiation. We don't know what it does to relationships. Does it make relationships last longer or break up more? We don't know, but we do know that current relationships aren't really working the way we think they should.
David, one of the problems is that people are working so long and they have so little time to be with one another.
Absolutely.
You know, and they tend to get bored and they tend not to be very, they don't plan exciting events with one another. But I also think that the whole idea of cuckling and hot-wifing is very shallow and very, back to our mammal brain, back to the animal brain, where animals will, eat, and sleep and screw. And the whole idea of deep monogamy, where there could be, friendship, love, sensuality, and safety, is something that we don't see a lot of. And I think it actually could be more rewarding than, screwing 100 or thousands of other people.
Well, cuckolding is just an extreme example of what we all do to some extent, which is make the other partner jealous. And that has been shown, jealousy in the right amount has been shown to keep monogamous people together for longer. Now, I just think with the cuckold people, their jealousy threshold is really high.
You haven't met my wife.
We all flirt in front of our girlfriends, and we all have those experiences of those girls who drive the guy crazy. Rock and roll has been built on songs about this, this multiracial woman coming down the stairs and driving me crazy because she flirts with my friend. Like, that's like Rolling Stones would not have a set list if it wasn't for that woman. And the cuckold example is just an extreme example of that. But we all have it going on inside of us. Like, this isn't like, oh, this is what they're doing. This is what we all do. And hey, if you're a guy and you have a wife or a girlfriend and you're not in any way making her a little bit jealous, that's going to be a problem down the line.
I wonder about that, because I wonder whether or not that what jealousy does is that it creates the need for a false front, meaning when a person is jealous, they try harder to become something more appealing, as opposed to trying harder to evolve and become more appealing for yourself, as opposed to the fear of losing your partner.
Well, I would say that's just an immature reaction to jealousy.
Okay.
And that exposes weakness in the partner. And that's maybe why we make our partner jealous, is to see what they're really made of. How are you going to respond to this? Girls are going to flirt with other guys in front of you to see how you're going to respond. And if you respond like a possessive, desperate weirdo, they're going to be like, oh, okay, this guy.
So I want both of your reactions to this. Is monogamy outdated? Is it simply a part of religious institutions, and therefore we can't break away from it because we're still, for the most part, atheists have not caught up with in the numbers? Or is there something very special about being monogamous?
I think monogamy works for some people, and I am absolutely not one of those kind of proselytizers or crusaders who is out there saying that every couple should do this. What I think every couple should do is sit down and talk about their expectations of monogamy. I think they should talk about their experiences of jealousy and what that's like for them. They should communicate. I don't think this, this kind of lifestyle or non-monogamous lifestyles is something that is suited for everybody. I'm not even sure suited for most couples. But I do think that we are foolish if we don't acknowledge that this dynamic, as you guys were saying, that jealousy has always played a part in our relationships. Look at the Twilight series. The Bella girl is in love with Jacob and with Edward. She's in love with the werewolf and the vampire, and she's trying to decide between the two of them. That pattern of a single woman in love with two men and trying to decide between them is a very powerful and common dynamic that pops up over and over and over again in literature, like Lady Tara's Lover.
It's just marry a bipolar person. It's just easier that way. That's where you get both.
Or marry the boring guy, Jacob, and... have sex with the vampire on the side. I know my Twilight. I know these guys. And that's what she was torn between. The Jacob guy was nicer, but this vampire guy was more dangerous. And
right. Well, you know what? Every
and women want both, really.
Women do like bad boys. Let's be honest. They like bad boys, but they also like to know that they're going to always be the queen bee. So they like the bad boy, but they don't necessarily like the bad boy to like the different women.
And that, you know, that pattern exactly is one of the stories that I tell in the book about a woman who felt like she was being a queen bee when she got to have multiple men. And when she got to bask in the attention and the admiration and the love and the lust from multiple men, it was very empowering to her and to many of these women. I think that what I will say is that this is a sophisticated, complex lifestyle and practice that should not be engaged in blithely. People should not just stumble into this without thinking and communicating and talking, because it is very complex, because the emotions and the triggers, the programming that this taps into is very, very powerful and, frankly, in some cases, even very dangerous.
But David, I would agree on everything except sophisticated. I think that it's very primal, and I think that it's, in many ways, you know, lots of women and lots of men who are highly sexual, I think it's for them absolutely perfect. I don't know the fact that they're not telling their children, and the fact that their children would not necessarily, I think, be comfortable with the concept unless they were of the same ilk. So I don't know how. I think that it should be tolerated, because I think everything should be tolerated that doesn't interfere, you know, with another person's individuality as a libertarian. So, you know, I don't really care what people do as long as it doesn't affect my ability to do what I think is best, you know, for my life. You know, having said that, I wouldn't want it to seem, at least from my perspective, that it's more evolved, it's more complex, but it certainly doesn't seem more evolved. It seems to me that people don't know how to build exciting relationships with one another, and therefore, you know, picking up a guy at a bar or a woman at a bar, you know, and having sex with a stranger seems just a lot easier, but not necessarily a lot more fulfilling. And I'm wondering if there's not some depression behind it.
Yeah, right. It sounds like a lot of these guys are coming up as putzes. Like, I'm sure some guys really want that and they really desire their wife to have sex with somebody. But, I mean, David, you mentioned the guy who started off his sentence as an existentialist. Okay, in my mind, I go, this is a really boring dude. His wife is boring, or his wife is bored by him, and she needs some outlet because he's worried about being an existentialist. Like really confident guys who get their way with women don't start a sentence by staying as an existentialist or even ascribe to any philosophy like that. And so I wonder, the wife brings it up, and the husband, because he's been spending too much time reading about existentialism, doesn't know what to do. And in order to hang on to something, some semblance of a female in his life, he goes, okay, well, I guess you can go have sex with other guys. And ultimately, it is a good situation for him, because at least he gets one woman, where typically his life was filled with having zero women. Which
right.
is a lot of guys'
this
lives.
This is almost always brought up by the husband. Wives hardly ever introduce this concept. It is always raised by the man.
And when do you think that's appropriate? The first date, second date, right before the wedding date? I mean, what's the appropriate time? After you have your second child, when would you bring up this delightful subject?
I think that I would bring it up after I, you know, had an established, healthy foundation of relationship, communication, respect, and negotiation in a marriage.
And she's not going to turn to you and saying, are you fucking kidding me? Is this the guy I married? I thought I married someone who wanted to marry me, for better or for worse.
And then the guys get
off on pushing
her forward.
I think that's what a lot of women and couples experience, because I think that is what society and literature has been telling them, that if you want to have sex with somebody else other than your spouse, then there's something wrong with your relationship.
But
that's the Disney
thing. The only reason I have to disagree with you is number one, society doesn't say anything. I mean, we are tuned into the internet. So in the, you go into the internet, you could find anything and everything that goes, you know, and religious institutions, though they, you know, they play a very huge part for those who go to them, they are not, you know, dominant, you know, worldwide, especially in Europe, and America is much more religious, but you have a huge number of people who, you know, subscribe to define themselves, quote unquote, as spiritual and not religious. So how is society saying anything? And
well, there are general voices out there.
Like where?
I mean, you can't just talk about having a cuckold fetish at lunch at work, like with your, you know, with your coworkers. That would be a little, but you can talk about having sex with your girlfriend. I mean, so there are, I mean, you're right, and you can find any community that agrees with what you believe in. And so that you definitely can. And I'm not worried about guys, because I get questions like this at my podcast more often than you would think about guys having a cuckold fetish. Not to the extent of having their girlfriend sleep with another guy, but they like it when their girlfriend flirts with another guy. But I think a few guys must get caught up into this because they don't know what else to do, and the woman wants it, and they're unassertive, and they just get bulldozed by this girl's sexuality.
Yeah, and I'm gonna also go further than David. What's the when you say these people are really healthy and successful? What are we measuring that? Are we measuring that by how much money they make, or how stable they are and secure they are as human beings?
Well, I mean, I'll caution you not to make generalizations.
But that's what I'm asking. That was a question.
Are the folks that I interviewed and assessed for this book were relatively healthy compared to what we would expect with the social taboo that they were engaging in. What did I base that statement on? I'm a clinician. A lack of psychopathology, healthy personal identities, healthy relationship communication skills, ability to negotiate, ability to be functional and successful in the world. They were taking care of business. They were putting food on the table. They were taking care of each other. They were taking care of themselves.
But David, let me ask you a question. Could it just be the case that these hot wives and their husbands simply have a higher threshold for jealousy? And that's it. That's the only thing that really explains it.
Yeah, you know, that is it's a very astute question, I think, and that is one of the questions that we have right now about this kind of community, about the people that engage in non-monogamy of one fashion or another, whether it's swinging, whether it's poly, whether it's this cuckold, you know, hot wife kind of lifestyle. Are they doing so because they are just biologically and psychologically less jealous than the rest of us?
Yeah, it makes sense to
maybe,
me.
Maybe. We just don't know. There's not a lot of research about these folks. One of the things that we see as you look at these couples and the people who write about this, who think about it, a therapist like me who treat these couples, is that they are more able to experience the jealousy but observe it, to look at it and say, hey, I'm feeling jealous right now. What's that about? I need to figure out why I'm feeling this way, and do I need to do something about it, rather than simply experiencing it and letting that feeling take them over and drive their reactions. Now, is that because it's a lesser intensity, or is it because of some other kind of aspects? You know, the folks that are engaging in these lifestyles tend to be somewhat higher income, tend to be rather higher educated, tend to be from traditions and communities where they are talking and thinking more about these kinds of issues. Is it those cognitive and those social aspects, or is it a lower level of jealousy? We just don't know, but these are really good
questions. We definitely know that it's a lower level of jealousy, and I think that it was very astute, and I do want to hear about that Times thing.
Yeah, there's an article in the New York Times that they basically linked a lower threshold level to boredom in ADHD kids. And it has to do with the way that their dopamine receptors work, but they just have a higher threshold for getting upset in bored situations.
Yeah.
And I was reading that yesterday thinking, well, maybe it works the same way with these cuckold fetishes.
Yeah.
Just, but instead of dopamine, maybe there's some jealousy thing going on.
I mean, the thing that I want to throw out is the drug of love, of feeling this, you know, oneness and specialness with another person. In cuckling, it sounds a lot like the rush of lust, mm-hmm. you know, and it doesn't sound like you're picking someone up at a bar or you're meeting someone and people are falling in love with someone. I mean, the polyamorous community, at least I could kind of understand that a little bit more. Because, you know, I do think people are able to be in love with more than one person at once. That makes sense to me. But I wonder what the people who they're cuckling with are getting out of this other than a hot night of sex with a stranger and going home and lying to their wives or girlfriends or whoever else they're with.
Well, you know, first I would argue that the guys that they are picking up are typically the guys who are not real monogamous themselves anyway, whether they're in a relationship or not. You know, there's an evolutionary kind of principle called dads versus cads, that some guys are good dads and good husbands, and some guys are cads who are bounders and out there, you know, fucking whoever they can and passing on their genes however and wherever they can. Oftentimes, the guys that these wives are picking up are those cads. Now, interestingly, when a woman is ovulating, when she is, you know, at the point where if she was trying to get pregnant, she could, she is more physically attracted to and more orgasmic with these guys who are cads. The rest of the time, she's more interested in being with that good dad kind of guy. And I think, again, these are some of these evolutionary sexual principles that these couples are playing with. Now, one other comment I'll make, and that is that the dopamine hypothesis is an interesting kind of concept, but I always caution people to be very mindful that, you know, there are hundreds of neurochemicals in our bodies and our brains, and reducing things to single mechanistic kind of neurochemical reactions is simplistic. And the, you know, one other interesting theory here involves testosterone, that couples that are engaging in these kinds of lifestyles have higher levels of testosterone, both in the men and the women.
I would agree with that, absolutely.
As opposed to over the course of a relationship, a monogamous relationship, where especially when children are born, we see levels of testosterone decrease, and sexuality and jealousy goes along with that. So I think that there are lots and lots of biological and psychological things going on here. But, you know, some of the issues that you brought up actually relate to my second book, which is called The Myth of Sex Addiction. And it came out of this book because one of the guys that I saw had destroyed, I think, three relationships, because this guy was just absolutely obsessed with having his wife be sexual with other men, especially black men. And the wives were like, no, I'm not going to do that. But the guy wanted it so badly that, you know, he ended that relationship and moved on to another one, hoping that that one was going to be it. And in the book, I said, well, you know, we could diagnose the guy as a sex addict, but I think that's kind of ridiculous, and I don't believe in sex addiction. I ended up having to go
write. Wait, Dave, let's slow down. You don't believe in sex addiction?
No, it is a simplistic explanation and answer for a very complex phenomenon. There are many, many, many different reasons why we do selfish, destructive things related to sex. Sex is not the explanation. If somebody has a problem with porn, for instance, calling them a porn addict is stupid. Porn's not the problem, they are.
Well, how about alcohol and drugs? I mean, or gambling? Would those not be addictions? There are other problems that actually lead to that?
Radically different, especially when we're talking about drugs and alcohol, because these are foreign substances that are creating externally mediated neurochemical and biological changes.
Unlike porn.
Gambling, when we talk about gambling, gambling is a relatively uncommon behavior, and we are better able to distinguish when it becomes abnormal and unhealthy. With sex, sex is a common healthy behavior, and there's absolutely no ability to distinguish how much sex is too much. You know, you made a comment earlier, it's very close to an old Kinsey quote, who said, you know, an nymphomaniac is anybody who has more sex than you do. And that's the subjective issue that comes in with sex addiction, is that, you know, what is the distinguishing line where we say, well, this much sex is okay, but that much sex is not.
David, when you say that gambling is not prevalent and sex is, I think people are buying lottery tickets more than they're getting laid.
Well, that's kind of...
I mean, I'm confused by this because aren't we all addicted to sex? I mean, if I thought of cocaine as much as I think about sex.
We're supposed to be addicted to sex. If we weren't, we wouldn't exist as a species.
And you talk about walking down the streets in New York City and all the people. What about all the asses? What about all the female ass? I mean, it hurts your brain walking down the street. We have our sound engineer nodding like, yeah, we know. I mean, we're all addicted to sex.
You just told his girlfriend, okay? You just blew his cover. Thanks a lot.
I meant shaking his head. See, I'm from the Midwest, and when we say nod, we really mean shaking his head. That's how it works in the Midwest. Good cover.
Sorry, John. Oh, no, John's not here today. We have a new engineer. Marco, thank you. So let me ask you a question. You're married, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that you might ever explore this area of your life?
You know, I don't like to talk a lot about my personal life just because...
You just did by doing the... That was the kind of... That was, you know, there's a lot to be said in there.
You know, I come at this from a clinical and a scientific background, from a scholarly background.
Yeah, that's the way I drink alcohol, too, by the way.
What?
I said that's the way I drink alcohol, from a scholarly...
I have great rationalizations for drinking if any of you guys want some. Yeah, I got plenty over
all
here.
Of my writing is from the direction of, look, wait a minute. We should not be using mental health and counseling and psychology to stigmatize behaviors that are probably normal, but we just don't like them. Sex and this kind of relationship is exactly one of those. All my life, I've hated bullies. I was born with one hand. I have a very obvious physical disability that is not all that disabling. But all my life, I have felt different from other people, and it has bugged the ever-loving shit out of me when I see people being bullies to other people and stigmatizing them because they're different. That is one of the things that I'm doing here, is saying, wait a minute, these couples are engaging in a practice that may be uncommon and we may not understand it, but beating them up and calling them unhealthy because they're different is not fair. You know, I got kicked out of school multiple times as a, you know, in high school, etc., for getting in fights whenever anybody would pick on one of my friends. There's nothing I hate more than bullies. And unfortunately, sexual values and morality brings out lots and lots of bullies.
And David, I would even expand on that and say, not only are they different and that's okay, but this is a part of us. We all seek jealousy to some extent. And for whatever reason, they just need more of that chemical in their brain than most people.
And I would 100% agree that people who have different sexual preferences, whatever they are, and however they get turned on or don't, should never be bullied, because it's simply their preference, and everyone should have the right to say no. I would be very, very disconcerted with the guy who's trying to bully his wife into having sex with other men when she's not inclined to do it. To me, that's bullying.
Oh, absolutely. And it is a lack of respect for the other person's independence and autonomy. And I think, again, the couples that I've seen that can make this work, and there are lots of couples who try this and it doesn't work. The couples who make it work are those couples who can communicate, negotiate, and treat each other with respect. If I am trying to force you to engage in something that you don't want to do, then fuck you. You know, fuck me. I shouldn't be doing that. That's not a healthy relationship. And it has nothing to do with the sex. It has to do with the fact that I'm being a selfish dick.
And you probably shouldn't try to convince your girlfriend to give you blowjobs either, for the same reason. If she doesn't want to give you blowjobs,
now you're going too far. Okay,
a deeper issue.
Now you're going too far.
I'm just trying to make this relatable for everybody.
We're talking about people who choked on bananas when they were kids. Don't let's not get too deep into this. Question: how much of your practice has changed since you wrote the book? Are you getting a lot of people who the husband comes in and says, "I want to try this," and the wife says, "No"? I mean, are you doing more sex counseling than ever before?
Over the years, first, my last name is Lay, Dr. Lay. I had the option. I could go become a politician and be involved in a sex scandal like Anthony Weiner, or I could become a sex doctor. I think I made the better choice. Over the years, I get lots of referrals, and the more... with sexuality related, because other clinicians are very poorly trained in sexuality and especially alternative sexualities. So these kinds of couples end up in my office. One of the things that I've seen more of over the past few years than I've ever seen before is women who are coming in with their husbands and the wife has done things like read 50 Shades of Grey and says to their husband, I want to try this. I'd like to try this spanking stuff or this domination stuff. This sounds kind of fun and exciting. And the husband tries it and then is like, whoa, I'm not sure I can do this. And it triggers all these feelings of, being a bad guy. Because remember, most of these guys are good dads. They're good husbands who, have been taught to be good, respectful guys. And engaging in that kind of aggressive or assertive behavior feels like being a rapist. And they don't want to be that. And it ends up in a conflict.
What women doesn't like rough sex?
Now, one of the things that I think is happening is that society is becoming more open and accepting of a greater range of sexual expression and diversity of sexual experience, especially amongst women. And women are now being able to assert and say, hey, I would be interested in trying this in a way that we have not experienced in society before. And now men are having to try to accommodate that. I'm seeing that more than something like this. Now, I will say, though, that having written this book about, the insatiable wives, women who stray and the men who love them, that people have come out to me around the world, psychologists, lawyers, doctors, politicians, sports stars have come out to me around the world saying, you know what? Not only am I interested in this and glad you wrote the book, but I do this and I've always kept it secret. You writing this book is the first time I've ever been able to say that.
And it's interesting because it doesn't seem like it should be that controversial. I want to close on this. And first of all, thank you for being so candid and just being so open with us. I want to underline probably the biggest point that I felt that you made, that any form of bullying, whether it's religious bullying, whether it is social bullying, whether it's the bullying that takes place in grammar school or even from parents to children, is inherently wrong, evil, absolutely abhorrent.
Well, except bullying women in the bedroom. They seem to like that.
We're going to put him on hold.
This is more taboo than the insatiable wives thing.
Nothing's taboo. Nothing's
and
taboo.
And then you talk about women in college not wanting or not using protection. I mean, that's like some weird lie of culture that says men are the ones who never want to use the condoms and women.
Listen, lots of people like rough sex because it's like play. Everyone likes to wrestle, But I still believe in no means no and. And when someone says, you cross my boundary, then you get away from their boundary. Anyway, thank you, David, for coming on our show. We're going to have everyone go and pick up your book, and we would appreciate if you would let everyone know about Gluck Radio and hear our other episodes. So
absolutely.
Thanks for being on our show.
Thanks. Your listeners can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Dr. David Lay. Last name is L-E-Y. Thanks for having me on. It was a fun conversation.
I want to once again thank David Lay and Mark Darien for coming onto our show. Pick up a copy of David's book, Insatiable Wives, Women Who Stray, and Men Who Love Them. It's on Amazon.com. And also, you have to check out Mark Darien's blog, AnimusEmpire.com. Lots to read, lots to learn. Mark, what do you think of our guy, Lay?
I think he needs to make a database of all these hot wives. So when guys get lonely on a Saturday night, they know where to go.
So, Mark, what was the one thing that he said that kind of hit you? And what did you agree with and what didn't you agree with?
Well, I agree that we all need jealousy to some extent in our lives or in our relationships. We do, whether it's just like a little bit of flirting at a cocktail party, all the way to seeing your wife get raw dogged by some total stranger. We all need it a little bit, and I agree with that. I do question the how evolved these people are who do participate in hot wifing. Like, would you really want to see your wife in that position if you really had a loving relationship, if it was evolved and you were trying everything else to make it fun and exciting? Like, go to salsa dance. I made that joke earlier. Go to salsa dancing. Maybe you just need that.
It's not a joke. And I happen to agree with you. The only thing I don't agree is I think jealousy is more of a mental illness that everyone has, and we need to kind of grow out of it. I don't see any benefit in it, you know, whatsoever. I don't think it makes things hotter. I think what makes things hotter is go to the gym, get a great ass, you know, and actually try to spice up your life.
Well, think back to when you were 22 and your girlfriend was flirting with another guy at the party. Like, that's like to a testosterone-fueled guy, that does a lot. Maybe later in life, it wears off, but I think jealousy does have some place in the right dosage.
I was more jealous. I mean, at 22, I had some jealousy going on, but I just don't see the place of it. I think that what jealousy is, it's more of a reflection of our own insecurity. If someone wants to flirt with my wife or my, I mean, I really don't care.
Well, maybe you should try hot wifing to spike some jealousy.
Nah, I don't want jealousy to me is, you know, is
maybe, a maybe you're one of these people with a really high jealousy threshold.
I don't have a jealousy threshold, but I do have a threshold for this. I do honestly believe that love is a whole lot better than lust. I do.
Yeah, I would rather have sex with somebody who I was in love in than sex with some faceless stripper. I take that back a little bit. I don't know. It's tough, but yeah,
you
know,
I saw you go back and forth saying, you know, those faceless strippers, I don't remember their face, but I had fun. Mark, yeah. You got to come more often. You're really a lot of fun on this show.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I would come out. I love talking. It's my favorite thing to do. And thank you for having me.
I am Dr. Errol Gluck. And remember, to every problem, there is a solution. I am your solutionist. Check out our other episodes on gluckradio.com. If you want to get to me, go to glucksolutions.org. Keep listening. Keep sending in your feedback. Till next time. Rough sex in the bedroom.